You're listening to the Scottish Football Forums podcast, the home of Scottish football banter.
Hi, welcome to the latest episode of Scottish Football Forums podcast, season 13, episode 28. I'm John, and tonight joined by Josh. How are you doing?
Good evening, John. How are you, mate?
I'm all right, aye. Could be better.
I'm doing very, very well, thank you.
We're also joined out the regulars by Dave. How are you doing?
Hello, well, thanks, John. Just supporting yesterday, but thankfully I'm here with yourself to go and speak and rant about yesterday, because we very much need to.
Like I was saying before the podcast started, basically, I'm here to take my medicine. Robbie and Aaron have conveniently nobody able to make it.
Conveniently had travel problems. Is that right?
Well,
what are the fucking chances the two of them having travel problems in the same night after losing a cup final?
I think it's getting McGillitis. Is that what we call it? Scott McGill, you know how like you always say Scott McGill avoids the podcast. Used to avoid the podcast.
Oh, aye. That's they've got a touch of the Scott McGill about them, by the way. That's what this is.
So returning from last week as well, we've got John from Scots Abroad Pod. How are you doing, John?
I'm getting there. A little bit rough today, but I'll be fine.
Fine, right, okay. And we've been meaning to get this guy on for a while. I checked back my messages about, I just fancy coming on the podcast sometime. 2021, 2 years later, we've got you on. Scott from SM Media, you all right?
I'm very well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be on.
Aye, no, good to have you. And we will be joined later on by Scott Amoruso, Let's It Run from Scarfs down the funnel, across the funnel. He'll be on later on to talk to you about Hearts. So, obviously yesterday, we may as well let the winners start off. Josh, the game itself was not the greatest, but doesn't matter in the grand scheme for yourselves because you won the trophy.
No, it wasn't the greatest game. But, you know, who cares? You know, at the end of the day, we lifted the trophy at 90 minutes on that tin pot set up where they had a wee kind of stand in the middle of the pitch. That really annoyed me. I want to see my team walk up the stairs at the National Stadium, you know, and stand aloft as they lift the trophy. But anyway, that's another point. The game itself, I mean, I felt it seat in the last 10, 15 minutes. To be fair to Aberdeen, well, they didn't have a shot on target. They had a couple of wee spells. In the last 15 minutes, I've got to say, we're quite nervy. But, you know, who else to get the goal, win the League Cup? You know, we could have a pod in its entirety based on James Tavernier and you know, dedicate everything he's achieved at Rangers and everything he's done for Rangers.
I'll let you do that. You can host that one.
Maybe that's a pod me and the guys will have another night. But the best game in the world, but hey, our names went in the trophy at 90 minutes, so, or 101 minutes or whatever it was.
Yeah, wherever it ended up. Dave, from an Aberdeen point of view, I know you said to me you had to watch it on TV. How did the game come across on TV? What did you think of the game itself?
Before I answer your question, George, just to elaborate on Josh's points. Josh, we've been in the game long enough to know that it doesn't matter how you win a cup sometimes, it's about how you win it. Sometimes you can win games a dirty 1-0. Yesterday wasn't a dirty 1-0. I'm not saying that by any stretch of imagination, but there's certain moments in which and certain times in which you just win a cup final, but because you survived to go and win it, it doesn't matter about performance, it doesn't matter about how you go win those games. So that's exactly what they did from a Rangers perspective. From an Aberdeen point of view, massive disappointment, because I think a lot of Aberdeen fans, myself included, looking at this, there was a lot of excitement ahead of this one, because of Rangers, the fact that it was Rangers and the hostile rivalry that we have between both sides. But also, there was a sense of confidence, a renewed sense of confidence, I would say, as well, John, after the Frankfurt win on Thursday night, which I didn't exactly agree with, if I'm going to be brutally honest with you, because although it was a fantastic win over Frankfurt, who are an established Bundesliga side, let's be brutally honest with ourselves here, it was a bit of a dead rubber. And we're obviously making 8 changes. I wasn't particularly sure on this one. As for the game itself, John, as Josh says, not the best game ever. But from an Aberdeen point of view, it's the major talking point here. No shots to target is quite simply abysmal, dreadful, and pitiful from an Aberdeen point of view. Bjorkstrand was isolated. Clarkson never really got the freedom that he usually does. He never got the authority that he usually does. And Duke, if I'm gonna be honest with you, John, I think Shaden Morrison and Duke individually had their own creative sparks within the game. Duke, I felt, was on the final third when he came on. Shaden Morrison, I was arguing on the chat yesterday regarding him starting ahead of Hayes, him or McGarry. The reason why I went for that, Aaron disagreed because of obviously the left wing back. But the point I'm willing to make here is, are you really expecting a 36-year-old to play left wing back at Hampden Park on a massive surface in a National Cup final? I would understand if Hayes was kept himself in fine fettle, was in fine shape, and was an energetic talisman for Aberdeen, but he quite simply isn't that. He's come under a lot of criticism this season for his performances by certain sections of this podcast channel. So I think that was the wrong call. But Hayes overall had a reasonable game. But if you could ask me for man of the matches, whatever have you, John, there was nobody really stood out from an Aberdeen point of view. And then that interview at the end, that's a PR on goal from Aberdeen Football Club. And Aberdeen Football Club has had many of them over the last few years. I'm going to be brutally honest with you on that front. You've got Andy Klonstein, that situation. We can hear all that, by the way. Klonstein's situation. You've got a host of other things. And then Robson coming out basically happy clapping majors. Quite simply, as a good look at the PR on goal as a fellow contributor of this podcast said on Sunday night. It's an absolute disgrace just the way the terminology came out from Barry Robson. Because by all means, praise a team. Praise a team within reason. I'm not a big believer you should start happy clapping a team and saying, oh, they were excellent, excellent, excellent. Yes, Rangers are a good side. And what I don't know if you guys agree, John, Josh, and Scotty, but what I would say about Rangers is I think, let's be honest, it's the same kettle of fish, it's the same breed that Beale inherited and Beale moulded. But let's be honest, you've got a proper manager now. And that's the difference, I feel. You've got a proper manager. I think 2 or 3 months ago, I think it was that game. But yesterday, you've got a manager that's astute in his own right and knew how to get a major result of that magnitude. So hats off to you for getting that result. But from an Aberdeen point of view, if that's our mentality moving forward, I fear it was, Sean.
Over to you, John. I think obviously we kind of spoke last week about how Aberdeen might set up. Obviously as well, we spoke about the Rangers situation in midfield. I called anyway for you guys that Sterling would start. Sterling ended up being man of the match. Some performance. You expected us to go, well, you thought more threat to up front for Aberdeen, but I don't think it worked out that way at all. The two up front, it just meant we went long and tried to do what we did at Ibrox.
See, sometimes this is where the European game is a pain in the ass, right? When it was scheduled, we both had that same issue. Rangers had the issue that they needed a result, so Rangers had to put out the only available 11, which turned out to be the best available 11. It was the same thing. Aberdeen, I feel like, see, when you give people that opportunity, I understand there's a risk of injuries. I understand Miofsky was out for the game, but see, sometimes you're always told that players need to keep going, keep moving. Sometimes a night off's the worst thing for them. But see, when you give people the night off and Duke plays and Duke scores after scoring the winner against Hearts, Duke to me then puts himself in contention for the final. Barron, I thought, was brilliant against Frankfurt. I thought I'd never seen McDonald play. I thought McDonald was brilliant against Frankfurt. And I thought the boy Milne was good against Frankfurt. So see, when I watched that game, I'm like going, you've given these boys an opportunity in your team. And now going to have to say you're not playing the cup final, when I think all that momentum that the fans seem to have for the Frankfurt game, the players would have had that as well. I think there's an element. See, if Miovski looked like he wasn't fit for me, Miovski didn't seem to get about the way he normally does. I just thought Duke and Miovski would have.
It seemed a bit of a panic from Robson to go and start him.
Yeah, I think I seen somebody, it's a physio on Twitter, had said that if you're coming off holding your hamstring limping, it'll be a miracle if you're playing in 7 days' time. And he was. But he said if he's playing for painkillers and he's not going to be 100% fit. He didn't look like Miovski that bothered Rangers for the goal at Pittodrie and bothered Rangers at Ibrox for 90 minutes.
Part of it was that based on the last couple of times we played each other and Miovski getting in behind the defence, that Balogun and Goldson sat a bit deeper at times.
I think that's why Rangers, because I think if you watched it, I actually think it's a mix of Sokler doing a really good job. So Sokler was delaying Tavernier for getting forward. So he was kind of pressing him in to allow Johnny Hayes time to go up 20 yards so that if Sokler went into midfield to press Stellan Lundstrom, Johnny Hayes was there on Tavernier. So they did a great job in Tavernier for probably 60 minutes. Rangers were quite comfortable, though, that they kept him back there. It was always the back four and the two in front of them were never too high in that first half. So see any ball that did look like, I think Clarkson got the ball once inside the first 20 minutes and he looked to go. But like you said, Balogun and Goldson dropped right away in behind and gave no space. And Clarkson kind of looked up like that was the ball I was going to play. I can't just shell it. And then there was a couple of times it got played through and the Rangers centre-halves were able just to flick it back to Butland. So I think Rangers probably gave Aberdeen the right amount of respect. They took everything on board that I was panicked about playing Aberdeen. If they played two up, they'd threat in behind. There was a danger there.
Yeah. What was your verdict, Scott, SM Media, Scott, just because we've got the two Scots on?
I would. Can I take everybody's point on board? What I would say is that I think the first half, I would say neither side played badly, but I wouldn't say it was a poor first half. I think both sides cancelled each other out. I think Aberdeen way too often tried to play the long ball that they got the goal from again in the game at Pittodrie. They tried that so often, but John rightly points out Goldson and Balogun were a lot further back. They were able to cancel that out. I thought the two centre halves for Rangers were really, really solid all game. Miovski, you could tell, wasn't fit. Where I thought Aberdeen struggled was in midfield, because there's no read that they were obviously going to start Shinnie, Clarkson and McGrath in there, but they weren't able to do much just because of the way they were set up. Rangers were very solid. Rangers had two defensive-minded midfielders in there whose first thought was, let's just keep it tucked in, let's just keep the shape. And Rangers, Aberdeen weren't able to get much flow going at all. I fully agree with Dave's point on Johnny Hayes. Johnny Hayes is not able to do that against a Rangers side in a heavy part like that. And that kind of played a part in the game as well, when we could go on all day about the state of hand in the pitch. Johnny Hayes wasn't able to handle that, and he had the likes of Tavernier and McCausland. McCausland isn't the best at tracking back, but Hayes wasn't really pushing much going forward. So McCausland had quite an easy time in the first half. But overall, I would say first half, I mean, probably the closest it comes is Seymour's shot that just Ruse doesn't really have much to do. It's an easy save for him. But I can't really think of a moment in that game watching it and seeing the pitch was a disgrace, seeing it firsthand. And again, Hampden is just a shambles at this time of year. But looking at the first half, I wouldn't say any of the two sides could say they were disappointed to begin at half time, nothing each, because there was nothing of any real significance in the way of chances. And I thought Aberdeen at half time, I was amazed they didn't at least try and bring on Duke and try and get a different creativity, because that long ball wasn't working. Goldson and Balogun were so comfortable that first half. I would have took Miovski off, to be honest, and put Duke on and just tried something different, because at half time that wasn't working, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, the game itself, I was chatting about it to my mates, and we were saying at half time we were kind of relatively happy, because I didn't feel that Rangers had opened us up that much. There'd been a couple of times, maybe in transition on the counter, that Rangers had a couple of, like, maybe half chances. But so far, half time, the game plan, as Robson's put it, is working. Because we've obviously set out to try and style for you, hope to grab a goal on the counter, and then protect the lead. The problem was, obviously, in the second half, as soon as you score, Robson's not particularly got a plan B. Eventually, he kind of tried four at the back late on, pushed on with Morris and Duke out wide, and that gave a wee bit of a threat, but it's just not enough. And if you're playing that game plan that you're just going to try and grab a goal in a counter, as soon as you do go behind, almost the game's lost at that point. I don't know if you feel the same, Dave, but that's what I feel. I feel as soon as that's happened, we've not came from behind domestically this season. Done it in Europe all right, but domestically, it's just a no-go for us.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, tactically, I don't think it just worked for Aberdeen, just on the, as the guys have alluded to. Miofsky obviously was rated 50-50 before the game, but let's be honest, I'm saying 50-50 in the most politest context whatsoever, because let's be honest, he had next to no chance of playing yesterday. He started, I think, because Robson panicked and he needed that live wire in the final third, and let's be honest, he never really got that. Duke, as I think it was John Walker making the point, when the likes of Barron, Jack Mill, obviously Duke, have obviously put in good performances, I'm a big believer that ultimately that should be rewarded in stats. Now Jack Mill, I think I was always going to be a game too far for him, because obviously massive game, he's still inexperienced, and sometimes these games can make or break players. But Duke set up that winner against Hearts. I mean, I say set up, he meant to shoot, of course, but yeah. And then obviously, I think we could be a bit better in terms of our organisation. If everybody did look like scoring in the first half, it probably was going to be Rangers had a couple of shovels at goal. We had a good 10-minute period, 50-50, 65th-minute mark. Just a little bit of lucky with a couple of things. Rangers, 50-50, 65th was Rangers. 60-50, probably 72nd, 73rd was Aberdeen. Pardon me, I'll take that back. The Rangers, oh boy. I don't know if you guys agree, but I think Rangers got their goal at the right time. And then, oh boy, it's a bit of a Rangers trying to keep their composure, trying to manage the game out whilst Aberdeen's flying forward in search of equaliser. And obviously, Kelly just comes forward a couple of times with the corners. And I've seen a lot of chat about whether it should be a penalty and all that kind of stuff, but that's a lot of Aberdeen fans clutching at straws, because let's be honest, if we look at the game in segments over the 90 minutes, it wasn't good enough.
I mean, Scott, I don't know whether you got a chance to see the game. It's maybe, did you get a chance to see it?
Yeah, I definitely watched it, yeah.
So maybe it's best to ask you as a neutral, in terms of the potential penalty shouts, would you have said the penalty, the one Butland and Duke?
No, I don't think that was a penalty. I think the first one, the sort of the shirt pull during the first half, I think the Aberdeen player's just too honest. I think given all the recent examples of Rangers getting, you know, similar penalties out of those situations over the last few weeks, it probably would have been wise for them to have went down and given them a decision to make. But because they don't, I can then understand why VAR maybe don't pay attention to it. So I think they were maybe just not streetwise enough in that situation. The Butland one, nah, I wouldn't have given a penalty for that.
John, see this, I mean, we're not turning this podcast into an episode of Sports Scene here, but I didn't feel that there was a penalty in the game at all, in any capacity. I felt there was probably a red card on the shinny one into the back of, was it Cantwell's head, wasn't it? But aside from that, I didn't really feel that there was any controversial decisions. I mean, the shirt pull thing, aye, look, well, actually, no, I'm kind of thinking myself over here now. Given past examples this season, it probably was a pen, right? Am I happy it wasn't a pen? It wasn't a given? Yes. Right? Would I be raging if I was an Aberdeen fan? Aye. Aye, right, okay, right, fair enough. I'm kind of changing my mind in real time here, right? I'm changing my mind in real time. The thing is about the... I feel that in games against Aberdeen this season, what we have struggled with and what the team has struggled with a lot at times is as time's ticking on in games, we're getting a bit more anxious and a wee bit more nervous to get scoring. And when we got to half-time at 0-0, I was nervous because I did feel to myself, we need to go into the second half, we need to get a goal within the first 5 to 10 minutes to settle this right down. And, you know, because I got that kind of feeling that longer this goes, the more Aberdeen are going to feel like they might be able to get into this here and get a goal. I was glad when we did get the goal. In terms of decisions, the shirt pull, I don't think there was anything in it, but, you know, if you're going on letter of law for this season, that probably was a penalty. But aside from that, I don't think Rangers should have had a penalty for any of their fouls.
Was there any controversy in the opposition box? Is there? I can't think of it. I know there's been. I mean, when you're at the game, you kind of sometimes get caught up in it. So at the game, I never seen the shot pull, but I've seen it back, and you're maybe like, okay, a penalty. I know there's been some talk about Shinny, maybe I should have been sent off. Aberdeen might think, from the point of view of Lundstrom, I'm pretty remember early on, was there not a foul within the first minute? Whereas I think if
it's a great tackle.
I'm just saying, that's
the most ridiculous rule in the world, mate. You could have a fist fight in the first 2 minutes and you'd get a yellow card.
What's that?
It's ridiculous. You could have a fist fight. Lundstrom's doing booked inside the first couple of minutes, and then Shinny's doing booked a couple of minutes later. But
there was a funny thing going around the press box. There was a guy waiting in Graham Shinny to get a booking in the first half for a bet builder. And he was an Aberdeen fan, you probably know him, I won't name him, but he was showing me this bet and he was waiting Graham Shinny, and I was like, I turned round to him like 10 minutes to go in the first half and I went like that, I went and put that's four fouls he's had, he's not been booked, and I was astonished. But the whole thing with the shot pull is, and what I kind of was told about it was, if it's in play, then the VAR's got to have a look at it, but something as well, I think we spoke of this as well, that it's got to be over a certain amount of play in the box. It's something ridiculous, but I can see why it's been mentioned, but I think there's, again, it's just, if you're given a shot pull for every single thing, we're going to have 30 penalties a game, and it's going to be pointless. So they need to come out and be really clear about what this rule is, and why it's a penalty, why it's not, because What they shouldn't do is ignore it, which they clearly have done. I'm one for thinking that the whole conspiracy thing's ridiculous, but you have to look at certain decisions and go, right, if Rangers have had two penalties for this and the same thing's happened in another game, why is that not been? That's all they need to do is a bit of clarity, a bit of consistency, all we're asking for. Yeah. And
I think as well with VAR that these things should be quickly checked. But
they should be looked at.
They're not even checking them. It appeared.
I think they are checking them. I think the problem is, though, I think if they're checking them and there's nothing, they don't tell anybody. They just leave it. Yeah. I think that's the issue.
Because the only moment I'd recall VAR being involved was at the melee at the end of the game. That's the only time we've seen that VAR had made some kind of decision.
What did you think of that? See, at the end of the game, that kind of stramash at the end of the game, John Brownlee and Dave, for that effect. I mean, I've seen loads of Aberdeen fans try to say there was a penalty in there, and I'm watching it over and over and over again, and I'm like, where is it they think there's a foul here?
The moment before, so it's when Duke's turning and then Butland tackles, I suppose, and technically it could be classes from in behind.
Fucking bail into him!
That's the argument, I don't know, he's turning, but the chance they are, but...
But anyway, I said that, I don't know what I turned this into sports scene here, sorry.
As I said, Josh, I think Aberdeen fans are clutching at straws. I think they're trying to deflect away from how poor the team was yesterday. Not a penalty for me, I'm happy to be honest in that regard as an Aberdeen fan. I think from a Rangers perspective, let's be honest, the tide been turned and Rangers have got that penalty against Aberdeen for, let's say Seema got fouled in the area by Kelrus, and that would be a penalty. We'd have all been berated the decision. So it works both ways, but no, it's absolutely not a penalty for me.
And then it was obviously a bit like, you know, that, and you couldn't see what was going on. I was even in the corner, and you still couldn't see, because everyone just couldn't see. I think the talk was the VAR, the potential red was for Miofsky, supposedly.
I thought it was, somebody told me it was Rubicic. Apparently Rubicic done something with an elbow, but apparently they found there was nothing in it.
Rubicic should push somebody.
Yeah. He was going mental, to be fair. I think Rubisic could have gone a one-on-ten handicap match and he'd have won.
I feel like Barisic must know that Rubisic is mental because he seemed to be really concerned with making sure Rubisic got away for every Rangers player. Like Barisic was manhandling him. I think Barisic maybe knows him and it's like he'll kill everyone on our team if we don't stop him right now.
But I felt like we talked about Rubisic last week. I felt defensively overall, I think Aberdeen played pretty well. There was a moment, that one moment in the game that Barisic gets down the left, Pulvara, Preussner just taking him out, take one for the team. Then the cross doesn't get in. But then even after that, you've got to defend the cross better. I mean, Tavernier does that so often. You've got McGarry and Jensen are both there. One of them has to kind of try and stop it, at least try and block it.
I think it's Dessers going for the header that kind of puts everybody off there. Like Dessers goes for a header and it leaves Tavernier wide open because somebody tucks in. I don't know who it is in the right, the left-hand side, tucks in and it leaves Tavernier wide open. And I think Dessers deserves a bit of credit actually for what he does there. Because he takes, realistically, who's marking Tavernier out of the game and it gives Tavernier time to compose himself. And what I like to see with a finish, puts the ball into the ground. It's a forwards finish. But he's got the time to do it. And that's the thing. And I think it's because of that header.
Talking of Dessers, because it's a nice link up here. Obviously, Scott, Hart Scott, Lawrence Shankland has been linked with a move to Rangers in January. How much of it do we think is media talk? How much do we think it could happen? Hart Scott? Or anyone else? What do we think?
I think with Shankland, the thing for me is that he's realistically one of the best finishers in the country. Is he what Rangers need at this moment in time? Probably yes. Is he worth what the high fee will be? I'm not sure. That's the thing. But what I think puts a lot of the Rangers and Celtic off Scottish players is the high fee they charge. And I understand why Hearts and Hibs and Aberdeen do it. But will Clement look at that and go, right, if I'm realistically going to be paying $4 million, am I going to be better maybe spreading that out over two strikers kind of thing? If it was me, I would go for it, but I'm not sure that Clement will. That's the thing. If it was me, 100%, I think he's the right guy, but I'm not sure he'll go for it.
Just to caveat that, Scott, as well, I agree with you, but I also think there's an element of paying the high price for versus resale value and all. I think it'd be more, you know, I'd be more comfortable paying 4 or 5 million for Majovski, for example, than I would be for Shankland, who's coming up on 30.
Is there an argument when you're talking about whether you can maybe kind of sign 2 strikers or whatever, that signing someone domestically who has proven they can score goals in the league is better potentially than signing Sam Lammers?
No, yeah, 100%. But the problem is that you've already spent the 3.5 and four and a half in Dessers and Lammers. Can you go and do it again? That's what I think the issue is. I think if somebody in the summer said Lauren Shankland or Sam Lammers for $3.5 million, I think a lot of the realistic Rangers fans would have went Lauren Shankland makes a lot more sense, but you don't have that hindsight and you've already, I mean, the summer recruitment for Rangers was a shambles, realistically, an absolute bin fire of a recruitment drive because you brought two players in for the summer, $8.5 million, who have scored something like 4 goals in the last 2 years between them. And Michael Beale thought that was the answer to, because Rangers lacked goals last season and he thought that was the answer to that solution. I think Lauren Shankland, I think Josh is right. I think it is the resale value. I think it is he going to be serviceable for 2 or 3 years? Yes, but he is getting to a stage where for the sum of money, like I think Majovski, I'd be very surprised if Celtic don't at least bid for Majovski in January. Do I think Rangers will bid what Hearts are going to ask for? I'm not sure.
So if we were to ask you what Rangers would be willing to pay, what do you think?
I think, I'm not sure. Rangers will give me a low ball offer to start with. They'll do what they usually do and try and just get it as low as possible. They'll insult Hearts to start with. And then I think Hearts will be looking for something in the region of 4. And I think they're entitled to. I think Rangers will probably go as high as 3, in my opinion.
Okay. What do you think, Scott, Hearts?
So,
So we've been quoted last week off our recent AGM. We are saying five. So that's when we say five. I know that some people balk at that value, and I understand the reasons for it. But I think his value to Hearts is the difference between us getting third spot and not getting third spot, 100%. And then that leads to that 5 million. So that's where that figure sort of comes from. I think the only realistic route out of Tynecastle for Lawrence over the next 6 months will probably be the Saudi League. That's possibly where a team will potentially pay the money for Hearts, because they won't be thinking about resale value or anything like that. They'll just see money and they'll just spend it wherever they want to, wherever they see fit. I don't think he'll go down south. I think he lacks a yard of pace to play down south, if I'm being perfectly honest. And again, not seeing teams paying that sort of money for a Scottish forward who's 28, turning 29. So I think he'll be at Hearts at least for the rest of this season, and then it'll be a case of seeing if Hearts just decide to run down his contract or not. Because again, the question will be, what does Lawrence Shankland offer to Hearts over 12 months? And what can you feasibly ask out of teams when he's only got 12 months remaining on a deal? So yeah, I can't see Rangers offering that sort of money. If I'm honest, I think Rangers are starting to get out of tune out of their forward players. And I think if there's a team in Glasgow that really need Lawrence Shankland, it's the team across the city from them. I think ever since they got rid of Jack Amakis, they've struggled to have somebody who can maybe come off the bench and maybe win you those sort of tight matches. But again, don't see Celtic offering that sort of money for him either.
And why is social media liking? I don't think he got Celtic.
That's what I was just going to touch on there, John. Another element also is I have heard from a couple of sources that Shanklin is a Rangers fan. So there might be an element that he sees, because, I mean, realistically, he probably has one big, semi-big move in him left at 28, coming up in 29, you know. He'll want to either achieve, or as you suggest there, Scott, make a lot of bank in terms of going to Saudi Arabia. If Rangers were to come in and bid, I don't know, £2.5 million in January, do you think, I mean, you might know him a bit better, having watching him every week, do you think he's maybe the type of player that would take the huff? Or, you know, because there is an element of, I don't know, I mean, I just feel that if the offer is there in the last stages of career, possibly to go to a club that he supported as a young boy, then he might want to take it.
Yeah, I think there's always the potential for players to try and engineer a move away. And obviously the player power is vast now amongst many clubs, and Hearts and Shankland wouldn't be any different from that. I think what makes this season different, though, is that he's also wanting to be on that plane in Germany. So I don't think he can afford to sort of try and force his way out there to a point where he actually finds himself not signing for Rangers, but also not in the Hearts team. Although I'm not quite sure who would replace him, to be perfectly honest. But yeah, I don't see that in his makeup, if I'm being perfectly honest. But I can understand the question. From what I know, he is certainly a Rangers fan. And I'd imagine that he would have an interest in playing for them. But unless there's a guarantee of first team football over the next six months, I don't know if he'd be that keen on moving just now when it's very up in the air over whether he's going to cement a place for the Scotland squad.
Scott, can I ask something as well? There's obviously the caveat of Alex Lowry being on loan at Hearts. If, for example, I don't know what's going on, if Lowry's well-liked at Hearts behind the scenes, I'm not sure, but if Rangers were to go, right, 3 million and we'll give you Lowry permanently, is that something Hearts would entertain, do you think?
I couldn't comment on whether they'd entertain it. I think Stephen Naismith is certainly a big fan. I'm not sure all the Hearts fans would take it. I think he lacks positional discipline. And I know he's only 20, but he really does. He really has no idea how to play a position. We've tried him in the number 10, where he's been okay. We've tried him out left a couple of times and he's just been terrible. Like off the ball, he just has no idea where he should be. Offers no sort of protection for his fullbacks, which again isn't all down to him. Stephen Naismith should know well enough then not to play him out wide left. But yeah, I can't say I've seen enough out of him to suggest that he's somebody you'd want to take as part of a sort of, you know, a part of a sort of transfer deal for Shankland.
I don't even think there'll be any other deal would there be that anyone from Rangers that Hearts could take. I don't think there would be.
$3 million
Well, I was actually just going to touch on this myself, Scott. Somebody was talking down Sam Lammers 5 minutes ago. The boys class, and this one's for the Sunderland FC fans listening to the pod. he is a fantastic player at $10 million and he is yours.
I had to do an interview with a Sunderland podcast earlier, and I think I've actually gave them like PTSD, like just horrible. Some of, like they were just like taken aback by some of the things I said.
And I've got family from Dublin that are all Sunderland fans, Scott, and I've been messaging back and forth over the last couple of days, and I just told them, do not let them anywhere near the transfer market.
I think they're quite like the used car salesman sort of vibe out of managers, because they've had Lee Johnson and they've had Jack Ross. there must be something that, like, it must just be the way that these guys can sell themselves. I'm sorry, but getting rid of Tony Mowbray and then replacing him with Michael Beale just is so wild. It's just so wild.
He must be a great interview. He must be a brilliant person, like interview wise. He must just sell himself. You've seen it firsthand. He loves himself. You can imagine him being in there.
He should be in marketing. I think he'd be great at marketing.
He would have 100% of went in there and said, I've got the highest win percentage in Rangers history. That is 100% what he's went in there and said. Yeah. And Sunderland have been like, right, come on in. We've got a cryo chamber that Martin Bain still had. Things like that.
I know we're talking about the Scottish Cup final and all that, but is the chief exec of Sunderland, is it still that guy that was in Sunderland Till I Die season 2? Remember the guy that was wanting them to get them
technical? No, it's Charlie. It's no, no. What's his name? They moved on a couple of years ago.
What's his name again?
Chairman, is the chairman like Ferry or something? Chairman's the youngest chairman.
Can't remember, man.
Right, very quickly, in terms of finishing up for the League Cup final, book of January, Dave, if Aberdeen were to try and change things and bring players in, who could they bring in to kind of change things? Or is it a case of it doesn't matter because the types of players the fans want, Robson's not going to be interested in because he's not interested in attacking football?
I think first and foremost, George, I think the priority is Jake's fault. Like, rather a transfer talk for me, you should be putting him back into bed for now. You've got Dundee on Saturday, you've got Livingston this Wednesday, pardon me. Livingston tomorrow as of recording, so Wednesday. So Livingston, Dundee, Motherwell, St Mirren and Ross County. Arguably, 12 points should be the minimum requirement here, because those five sides, probably arguably the bottom five and the bottom six sides, apart from St Mirren and Dundee, who are obviously doing well right this minute in time. So I'd argue that should be the priority right at this minute in time. In terms of January, I think we need a number of reinforcements when the time comes around. I don't know, but we'll scribble them off one by one here, John. Probably an extra winger to probably accommodate for... that can maybe do a bit of it, that maybe got a bit of adaptability about him.
That can maybe do... that he's no interest in wingers. I mean, that's clear.
Sorry, I'll take that back. I mean wing backs, pardon me, John. I mean wing backs, sorry. Not wingers, wing sorry. Backs. Wing backs. I'm keen to take that. Probably an extra striker in any potential eventualities that Mirovski gets a big move. Because the last thing you want to find is you've got your line on Duke and your line on Alfie Bavage for goals. And let's be honest, it's a lot of pressure for a 17-year-old, and it's a lot of pressure on Duke as well. And let's be honest, is Duke going to go and score, start scoring goals? So a striker for me should be. I know we've got Sokol, but I think an extra one would be beneficial. Midfield wise, maybe some. Well, I've missed the most important one here, John. Holding midfielder to replace Ramadani. I nearly forgot about that. John Boisdale's thinking came out of my mind there because I've sorry thought of him and I remember he was telling me. Defensively, maybe an extra fullback or indeed wing back as I've referred to. And then see if anything else comes to that that's a potential gem to see how that comes. But Baron Robson for me should be looking at himself first and foremost and looking to see how we got on the next fortnight, because if not, he's not going to see Burns supper. I can tell you that for nothing.
The tough thing for me is at the moment that if Aberdeen don't make a decision pretty soon, then if there's a new manager that comes in, I know this is like speaking hypothetically, he's not going to have a window to get players in. I think the talent's there at Aberdeen, so maybe it just needs to be utilised a different way. That's the thing.
I think this is, people were saying the lead up to the cup final was massive for Robson. I disagree to a certain extent because I argue this year's period coming up is massive. It's even more important, should I say, for Robson, because if he doesn't get, I'd say if he loses two or three games next fortnight, I think he's gone.
I've got to say, Dave, John, on the weekend of that interview Michelle Moan done with the BBC, how Barry Robson managed to surpass that in toe curling cringiness is really, really outstanding.
What's in Derek Adams?
Oh, we'll get to Derek Adams. We'll get to that, John, hopefully we do. I think, look, Barry Robson ain't got it. His win percentage is awful. His football is crap. He's made good players look poor.
The only player he's improved is probably Miowski. Nobody else, everybody else has regressed under him.
Yeah, and the fans ain't having him anymore. You know, there's enough fans on this podcast, Aberdeen fans, that go to, you know, every game between them, and they ain't having him. So his numbers up, in my opinion. Whether or not, you know, how that shapes up over the next couple of weeks, and as you say, John, there's the issue of the January transfer window. But ask yourself this: would you trust Barry Robson with the rest of your season? Because that was the question that Rangers fans were asking of Michael Beale. You know, Mike and Michael Beale's first 8 or 9 games or whatever, right? The football was crap. But actually, when you look back at the results weren't that terrible. PSV was obviously the worst. But, you know, the question was then asked, oh, do we want to trust this guy with the rest of the league season? His recruitment was terrible. And the board moved swiftly and sacked him.
I'd argue it's going to be a tall order for the top six this season, Josh, from an Aberdeen point of view, because Celtic and Rangers will take care of itself, as you know. Hearts seem to be very erratic, but after a cracking win for them at the weekend against Celtic that we'll get on to. Hearts seem to have this period. Nesmith's similar to Robson in many ways, that he's under pressure from the Hearts supporters, but whenever he needs a big win, he seems to get that big win. Robson's vinced somewhere in that regard. So you've got Hearts, who are obviously going to be strong in the second half of the season again. You've got Hibs, who are slowly gelling under Nick Montgomery. Nick's not had a proper transfer window yet. If Nick Montgomery gets a good blend of players in January, Hibs could be a different proposition in the second half of the season. St Mirren under Roberts, I know they're slowly dropping down the table a bit, but St Mirren under Robinson are also doing very, very well. Dundee under Tony Dock are finding different ways to win. So from an Aberdeen point of view, it's going to be a lot harder this season to try and get to the top six. And if Robson finishes 7th or 8th, that's a failure amongst many Aberdeen fans.
Can I ask, what's the situation with that, the boy Guy? Is he just not fancied at all? What is he? Like, because I've only seen him a couple of times, and obviously he's a big fee, but yesterday I was like, he was warming up 4 or 5 times and he's nowhere near, like, there was nothing.
Was he stripped? He wasn't on the bench, actually.
Yeah, was he not?
There's been a rumour kicking about There's been a rumour kicking about through sources that he was in Paramount on Friday evening. Paramount, for the context of the listeners out there, is a pub in Aberdeen, a club that obviously he opens for 3 AM, so that just tells you the simplest of context behind that one.
But surely that, like, in terms of recruitment, because I look at Aberdeen's recruitment and I think on paper it looks pretty fine. Like, obviously Clarkson coming in permanently, Nicky Devlin I think has been good. Graham Shinney, Rubisic, McGarry, McGrath, Jensen, all starters. And then you've got this 500k Senegalese striker who's nowhere near the, who's just in Siberia. That just doesn't make sense to me.
I don't think the problem's the personnel. I think it's the fact that it's a one-size-fits-all policy in terms of formation. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no alternating dependent on fixtures. Everything seems to be, it has to be three at the back, and it has to be wing-backs. And it's like, given the midfielders they have, there's such a good opportunity to go with a 4-3-3 system and actually dominate possession in some games. But he just seems so reluctant to do it that, I mean, that's going to be ultimately his downfall. I don't think the recruitment's that bad. Like you say, Scott, on paper, I think a lot of his signings have merit and can offer a bit of value. But until he deviates from this formation, I think Dave's right. I think it's just a case of when rather than if.
And you look at Ramadani as well, not replacing him, because that's a big, big player to lose and not replace like for like. And I think yesterday a player like that in the midfield could have went up against Lundstrom and Sterling and gave them a real scare, because you don't have that ball-playing midfielder who can sit in there and make it tough. And Aberdeen, that was Aberdeen's problem yesterday, in my opinion.
See, at the point of Ramadani going, Robson was quoted as saying that Pavara was going to be his replacement, but Pavara's not that type of player.
No.
Barron could maybe do it, but Barron situation, he's not signed a new contract. Rumours are his head's been turned, he's going elsewhere. Potentially Rangers, which we'll see. I'd be interested to ask Scott at Hart. We're talking about Robson being under pressure. Prior to maybe the last week or so, Naismith's considered to be under pressure by some Hearts fans. I don't know if this is all Hearts fans. I'm going by what I see maybe on Hearts Twitter and stuff like that. And I know Graham that we've had in the podcast, he's quite vocal about the fact that he's not a fan of Naismith. Does Saturday change things much, or what's your feelings on Naismith?
It's a strange situation, because Saturday you didn't actually learn anything new about Hearts. Hearts have actually been really compact. They've been really good defensively, especially as a unit this season. I think we've got the second or third best defensive record. So the way in which we sort of adopted the low block and just sort of asked our wing-backs to kind of engage with Celtic when they got to a certain area of the park, it wasn't really a huge shock. I think the biggest shock for Saturday was the fact that Celtic didn't react to that and try and switch the ball a little bit more quicker and maybe try and alternate and play some balls in behind our defensive line. But I think in terms of Naismith, his biggest problem is his own sort of PR. You know, when Naismith got the gig in April, or at least when he was sort of auditioning for the job in April, his first interview, he talked about, I'm not the type of manager that wants to play for a 1-0. I want fast, free-flowing football. And I think that's stuck in a lot of Hearts fans' heads. And it's been very difficult to look at the obvious positives that he's brought to us defensively, because we've been so conditioned to think about what he was going to offer us as an offensive team. And that's been probably one of the biggest sticks that we've been able to beat him with. He's doing what any rookie manager would. He's making mistakes. You're hoping he's going to learn from it. But unfortunately, with the caveat that third place brings just now, there's so much pressure on Hearts, Aberdeen and Hibs to get it right and get it right quickly, that it's probably not a job that's conducive for rookie managers just now. And I think Hearts and Aberdeen are seeing that at the moment. But, you know, hopefully Saturday's a sign that players can get a bit of confidence. But the problem is, with that system we had on Saturday, we can't go on Saturday against St Mirren at home and play the same way. Because again, we're going to have 60, 70% of the ball rather than 20. And that's when we're having a problem. We're just far too passive when we do have possession, especially from the back.
The pedestrian then too slow, like going forward and just still going to take the game to team?
Yeah, pretty much. We've really struggled in centre midfield. We don't really have someone in there that's got any real sort of creativity or guile. We've really missed Barry Mackay in terms of having an option in that final third. I think the likes of Boyce and Shanklin have really missed Mackay not being there. And we've not replaced Josh Ginnelly, who'd had a really sort of productive 6 months before leaving us in the summer. We've signed two or three players to try and cover for that position, but they've all been brought in under that sort of tag of project players. So again, they're showing it in flashes. The likes of Vargas and Oda have done okay in certain games. But again, because we're playing up against these low blocks most weeks when you're playing at home, the lack of guile and creativity in the midfield means that we're just struggling. You know, we're struggling to break teams down. And again, similar to what, you know, Aberdeen are probably experiencing, if you don't get the first goal, it's really difficult to see how we're going to turn it round. But, you know, we're third and our points tally is okay for this point of the season. We've got as many away wins as what we had the whole of last season. So I know it does, sometimes if you talk to a Hearts fan, we do make it sound all downbeat, but I think it's all just relative ultimately to where you hope to see yourself. And again, I think a lot of that boils down to the bullish comments that Naismith made. I think, again, maybe just naively when he was trying to audition for the job, I think he was aware of what Hearts fans didn't like about Robbie Nielsen. So he thought, I need to go against type. And I think that's why he's made those comments. But ultimately, it's maybe, you know, fired back on him to some degree.
Yeah. Scott, sorry. Ken Rose, how big a difference have they made when they've been into the back three?
Yeah, I think switching to the back three specifically has helped with Rolls. I don't think Rolls suits a back four, unfortunately. I think he lacks a bit of physicality, and I think what certain teams can do is then sort of go one-on-one with him and sort of get the better of him. I think playing left side of a three, that's less of an issue for him. Frankie Kent's been probably our only standout signing from this summer. I think the greatest attribute that he probably brings is that he's very vocal. And I think that's something we missed when Craig Halkett got injured last season. We had to play Toby Sibbick and Kai Rowles together as a central pairing for the remainder of that season. And as much as I like those players for certain aspects that they bring to the game, neither are commanding or vocal. And I think we really struggled when Halkett got that injury. So Kent's probably been the real plus point in terms of who we've brought in over the summer.
I'd be interested to know, John, you've obviously done your analysis. What so many teams now are incorporating the low block, not just against Rangers and Celtic. How is it that even Rangers and Celtic struggle with it at times, but they kind of generally get results. How did the other teams manage to kind of play against it?
So Scott's point, Hearts Scott this time, Scott, you make good points, but this specific one, I'm going to go to Hearts Scott. See what he said and see what, I know we're going to talk about Derek Adams. Stephen Robertson and David Martindale have said very similar but in a complimentary way things to what Derek Adams said. He said they are really good at setting up against Hearts, Hibs, Rangers, Celtic because Hearts, Hibs, Rangers, Celtic have a pattern to come at teams, so they know how to block against it and counter on it. But when they come against the other seven in the league, it's very like for like because they want to do to them what they want to do to the other teams. And it becomes, and that's, I know I tweeted earlier and it was maybe a wee bit disrespectful, but when I say I feel like more teams are interested in stifling than honing entertaining football, it's the same thing Scott's saying, Naismith said. Every young manager has got balls until they get a job where there's a bit of pressure, and then they don't want to give young players a chance. They don't want to play the attacking football they wanted to. Michael Beale wanted to release the handbrake, then shat himself and he realised he was the man in charge. That's what they're all like. They all have the same idea, and then it just becomes this. Right, how do we stop against this? Because this is one of my problems again with Sports Scene. Scott can tell us better. I've only seen the highlights of the Celtic Hearts game, but Sports Scene don't then tell me what Hearts did differently to what I've seen Hearts do and what was successful. But Stephen Naismith talked about playing out for the back against a high-press Celtic, the best press in the league, and he talked about how he was able to put pressure in the middle of the park. I then didn't see any clips of that on Sports Scene to show me what Hearts had worked on. But by the sounds of things with Scott saying, I mean, Hearts were stoppage time away for taking 3 points for Ibrox as well. So they obviously know what they're doing in that, but to me it seemed very low block against Rangers. So is it just that they kept the clean sheet and got the goals on this occasion because it was a corner and a free kick that got them the points? So I don't know if things are different from Naismith or if it just stars aligned a little bit in that day.
No, I would say the one thing that he's learned for the Rangers game is that first half against Rangers, we had an out ball in Vargas, who was playing directly as a number nine. We actually had Shankland being a bit deeper that first half. And on two or three occasions, we were able to turn the Rangers centre-halves and get a bit of respite, get a free kick or a sort of throw-in in their half. Now, for some reason, Stephen Naismith that day decided to make a tweak at half-time, and he pulled Vargas out wide left and then isolated Shankland up top. And as much as Rangers weren't overly threatening, you could just see just the pure pressure of having to chase the game for 45 minutes. That's why we made silly mistakes. You know, Kent losing Danilo for the second goal, Haran pulling somebody's jet. It's people losing concentration because they're absolutely knackered. And the good thing about Saturday was he didn't make those tweaks. You know, things went well for us and we just kept at it. And to be honest, if we'd been a little bit more adventurous in the last half an hour, there was opportunities there to pick Celtic off because they were playing with such a high line towards those last 20 minutes that we did bring Vargas on. And I think if we tried a couple of sort of just, you know, percentage balls out for the back, we probably would have got a bit of joy out of that. But it's really strange, this result. You would think, you know, you win it the first time at Parkhead in 14 years, you would think that that would be classed as a statement result for Naismith. And I think it is to a degree. But for me, the acid test to St Mirren on Saturday, that's when you're going to know if he's learned anything. Because if he goes in there with the same 11 just because it worked against Celtic, he's not learned anything. He's not learned what's been going against us so far this season. So that's what I'm hoping to see. I just want to see one or two more advanced players playing on Saturday and maybe a slight change in shape from a sort of 5-3-2 to maybe something similar to a 3-4-2-1.
Basically, managers in Scotland don't have adaptability trait that you get in Football Manager. That's the problem.
Well, it's the same with Montgomery that's came in at Hibs. I think a lot of Hibs fans admire him because he has brought an identifiable style of play, but again, it's very much one size fits all. And this is why Hibs struggle in certain games because they go with this two-man midfield and a lot of teams will just say, that's fine, we'll just put an extra man in there and we might not be flashy like Craig Levein's done that on Saturday. So we'll win all our 50-50 balls, we'll get to the second balls and we'll get one or two chances and we'll just restrict us. And until Hibs learn from that, they're not going to get any more consistent than they are just now.
And you've seen that, you actually seen that with St Johnstone. Levein had that press set up multiple times before they get the goal from it because they know Hibs insist on doing that. Like I watched it firsthand at Ibrox. I thought it was mental when I seen him just going 4-4-2 at Ibrox. He was lucky that day, I think, that Clement had also went 4-4-2 with his Rangers team. So it was like they got away with it a little bit. But I was like, how long are teams going to watch this before they just go three in the middle and they're going to play through?
Someone touched on the Derek Adams thing. We may as well bring it up. The interview, there's mixed opinion about it. Some folk think he's off his rocker. Other folk maybe think he said the right thing, but maybe not said it the right way. Would that be fair to say?
I think it's the right thing. I think he's the wrong person to be saying that because he's came from League Two, where I don't know if you've watched any League Two football in recent weeks. It could be 7 each, and it's the most boring game in the world. But because of the way he comes across, and this will maybe be a bit disrespectful to Derek Adams, but his personality just doesn't. He's not the right personality to say that. He just looks silly. And there's method to what he's saying. Like, I think a lot of games, like, we're nearly 3-0-0 just on Saturday, in fairness. So there's merit to what he's saying. But the problem you've got is he's not the right man to say it. And especially when he's went in to Ross County for a third time and has, I think, we've won the last three, am I right in saying, since he's been in? And then he loses one game and now it's all about how bad the standard is. It looks more like sour grapes, but the point's valid, but he's not the right guy to say it. That's just where I've kind of come down.
I would agree with Scott. I think if I could find an analogy to it, it would be being back at school and someone who isn't a part of your school coming in and telling you that your school's shite. And yeah, you don't like it. Now, you've probably said to your pals for months on end how shite your school is. And I think the problem with Derek Adams is he doesn't realise that he's an outsider now. He's been away from the game that long. We don't look at him as being sort of part of the inside circle, so to speak. And I think that, like Scott touches on, his delivery's not great either. I think the timing of it's not great. See, if he'd maybe had that discussion maybe after they'd won a game, people would go, okay, he's raising a valid point. He's not overly happy with the style he played, even although he's getting results just now. But the fact that it came off the back of a defeat, you just think, I mean, look, I'm a Hearts man, so I'm hoping that this is reverse psychology and they've got Hibs at the weekend and it fuels these players up. But yeah, I don't think it was great on his part, but there probably is some element of truth in there somewhere.
Talking of players, how do we think the players will react to it, Josh?
Look, I'm a member of the anti-Derek Adams camp. See, when he said it, my first reaction was, fuck off! You know, I mean, look, I can kind of, you can't deny reality, right? And, you know, Scott said there, we nearly had 3-0-0s at the weekend, right? But there have been some great weekends of football this season, right? We've seen loads of entertaining matches, you know, goals where, you know, there's no game with under 2 goals in it, under 3 goals in it, that sort of thing. So, I think that there is, I mean, what he was saying about more entertaining, or 100 times more entertaining than in League Two, what was it? Was it Morecambe's or something? What's their name?
Morecambe.
Morecambe's,
right. Honestly, I could not tell you where that is, you know, and this cunt's coming up here, and like you're saying, Scott said there, he's an outsider, right? He might be fucking as Scottish as a bloody shortbread tin, but he's an outsider, and I'm not having him come in here and get the big Billy Big Paws about how shite our game is. It was a poor weekend of football. I don't think it's that bad, right? I mean, I'm not saying it's great and we're watching German football here, right? But it's not that bad. Anyway, John, you actually asked me about the players. I know that. Sorry, that was the question.
Erin is here, really, isn't she? Like, that's the type of thing. Like, ask Erin a question, and she'll just hear a different answer.
The thing is, I don't know, mate. It was a Derek Adams type of thing to do, wasn't it? There's a touch of the Mark McGee about Derek Adams. So, the answer probably to your question is, we will see next weekend.
Right, grand scheme of things, October, early October, Josh, you were like, the title race is over already. Celtic then lose back-to-back games in the league. Is there the title race now?
Right, can I just caveat, right, I want to let the other guys come in this, right, but can I just caveat this? Right, we were talking earlier about how shite Scottish pundits are, right? I mean, I have heard a number of them now saying that if Rangers win their 2 games in hand, they're top of the league, and the league's in their hands, right? We're still to play Celtic 3 times. The league is not in our hands. So, you know, that is just it's a fucking basic principle of arithmetic to work out. Is the title race back on? Yes, the title race is very much back on, but it's a race, you know, and I'm not saying we're going to win it.
Okay, John.
Aye, it's more competitive now. There's more chance, but Celtic, he's going to back Brendan Rodgers. He's brought Rodgers back. I reckon they'll sign people, or they'll try and sign quality in January. The old cliche that it's hard to get good quality because the good players don't want to leave their clubs, and the bad players, nobody wants them. So you're taking a punt on them. I think a lot of it will be dictated. I don't know if Itati, Maida, Kyogo are going to be back fit. And if they're then selected for the Asia Cup, then we've got Sima going to AFCON. I think, don't want to go back to it, but I think Rangers need to sign Lauren Shankland because I can't envisage us going into the 3 months with Danilo, with Essers, even though he's been slightly improved. That would concern me because I do think Celtic will strengthen. And Celtic need Itati back. They've got Maida back now. Kyogo somehow found a run of form that none of us seen happening when he's got like 1 goal in 12 league games, which is mental. I could not believe when I heard that stat. They will come good. they can keep going like this. I mean, they might, but I just, Brendan Rodgers knows this league. He knows how to win this title. I can see them just steadying the ship again, getting players back in. but the title race is on.
Do we think, Scott, that it forces the Celtic board's hand for Rodgers to go, right, I told you I need... I think he's saying four first-team players. Are Celtic willing to spend the money that four first-team players would be required? Like, in terms of, I mean, whatever we quantify that, I say we say it's like four first-team players for Celtic potentially just now could be £5 million per player.
Just regarding Celtic, I can't help but think there's a little bit of spoiled brat syndrome going on at Celtic at the moment. They've won 11 titles out of the last 12. They've not lost at Parkhead in nearly 3 years, but they're going to attack the board. They're going to literally try and attack the board, apparently, on Saturday because of one defeat away from home. Now, I will emphasise by saying this, Celtic, no... I thought when Brendan Rodgers was announced that the fall, one of either two things, going exactly where Angela left off, redo his shape, because the players that Ange brought in were for Ange's shape. Brendan Rodgers has tried to go in there and adjust them into his old shape that worked when he won an invincible treble. They're not the same players. Kyogo isn't Moussa Dembele. That's the problem. Matt O'Reilly is probably the one player you would say that's kicked on a level, but Greg Taylor's went back the way, Alistair Johnson's went back the way. They're not inverted. They've been signed as inverted fullbacks. Greg Taylor was brilliant last season as an inverted fullback. He's had to completely change the way he's played. So if Celtic want to go gung-ho with Brendan Rodgers, they have to back him. But the problem, I've said from the beginning, there are a certain proportion of the Celtic support who didn't want Brendan Rodgers back to begin with because they hadn't forgiven him for leaving. So now, when results turn, and the performances have been poor, don't get me wrong, and I'm not defending the Celtic performances, but no matter what, those Celtic fans will go for Brendan Rodgers regardless. See, in 2 weeks, if we're talking about Rangers going to Parkhead and beating Celtic, it will get toxic towards Rodgers with a portion of the support. Now, I heard somebody saying the other day as well, oh, the atmosphere, the lack of atmosphere is not helping Celtic. That's nonsense. Celtic, the way Celtic are playing right now is not suited to the players that are currently in that starting 11. That is it, pure and simple. Now, there maybe is an attitude problem. Recruitment's been really bad. Already, we're talking about the likes of Lagerby, Elka being sold. Coming in, like, not with the exception of Palmer, I don't really think any of the other players can guarantee a starting position that have came in the summer. There are a lot of project players. Celtic needed to replace Jota with somebody similar. They don't have that flair in the wing anymore. Palmer, I think the load in Palmer is way too high. I think the fullbacks have regressed to such a bad level in terms of the way they're now being played. It just leaves this question of, I think there's a mini crisis, but I think it's way over the top. Celtic could win in the 30th and everything should be rosy. Celtic have been here before, they've had bad results, they bounced back because of how fluid it was in terms of recruitment under Ange. Now, because recruitment's not been as good, the board are getting it. The board at Celtic have got one thing in their mind, and it's beating Rangers. They've been in the Champions League again and get tapped out after five games, and nothing. That would be my concern other than two league defeats of we're going into a competition like the Champions League and being embarrassed. That would be my bigger thing. Celtic should have. We talk about it. Joe Hart is Celtic number one quality. Greg Taylor's probably in terms of being a first team left back, and they need a new striker. They need a new. They need a new winger. They need four or five, but they need another. Just a bought player and they've spent money and just not kicked on.
It's part of it, Scott, that Rodgers doesn't really want to be there, and it was just the fact that the Celtic job was available.
Yeah, I think to a degree. I think the biggest problem with Celtic comes down to the fact that as a club, their main priority is being one step ahead of Rangers, and unfortunately that creates such a small margin for error that all it takes is maybe two or three results and things do look, you know, in a very hyperbolic way, it does look like it's a full-scale crisis, when in fact it probably isn't. But I think the issue with Rodgers is, and no one will confirm this or not, but there's still a lot to be said over whether he was actually who the board wanted, or whether it was Dermot Desmond who wanted him. So there's that issue to try and tackle. I think Brendan Rodgers probably went in there with his eyes open. He was probably quite happy to take the contract. His ego probably dictated that he felt that he could go there and he could pretty much match Michael Beale and sort of win that battle pretty easily. But things have changed since then. I think the issues that the recruitment brings, I don't think he maybe fully understood it. And he's now starting to backtrack on, you know, at the start of the season, he felt quite comfortable with the squad, but now it's not got enough quality. And it's not just the European games he's saying that, and now he's now referring to that when he's talking after domestic games as well. So there is a bit of me that thinks, is he already starting to engineer that move away? Because normally when managers start talking about policies and process that are being constructed by the board, the only ends up one way, and it tends to be with the manager leaving eventually. So I do have concern, well, not concerns, but I do have reservations over whether he'll be there for the full season. And I think it's going to, just now, it is a title race, but I think Rangers have the upper hand, not player for player, but I think they've got stability with their manager. And I think that might ultimately, you know, make the biggest difference this season.
Dave, to round things off, do you think that in terms of recruitment, there'll be a problem because what the board want and what Brendan Rodgers wants will be completely different? I don't believe any of the players in the summer were players that Brendan Rodgers would have been saying, yeah, that's what I want. I think the players were already lined up, and it was a case of Rodgers was coming in and you're just coaching them.
Yeah, we wanted Brendan Rodgers, Joe, yeah.
Yes. In terms of recruitment, I think in the summer, they were all the board signs. It was me. It was Rodgers going, these are the players I want. I don't think there's much forward thinking.
I think that was the fallout from the last time, if we remember, John. I think the fact that Brendan Rodgers wasn't allowed to be his hands on, and Peter Lawwell was having his say in transfer dealings and transfer policies, and I think that was a big reason as to why Brendan Rodgers left Celtic the first time around. I think that's been publicly admitted and acknowledged by either party when he came back last May. So I think that's a massive reason as to why the whole situation is quite simply one that's disarranged now, because who's dealing with all the transfer recruitment and who's got the prerogative of the recruitment at Celtic? Is it the recruitment team? Is it Brendan Rodgers? Is it the board of directors at Celtic? That's the million dollar question we're asking ourselves right this minute of time, because if it's Rodgers, then it's on him. Simple as that. If it's the recruitment team, well, it's on them. If it's the board, then that's a different proposition altogether, because if it's the board, then ultimately there's not many football-related people that are involved in boards in the modern-day world. So if it's the board, then the whole situation itself needs a long, hard look at. That's the brutally honest analogy of it.
But the thing is, John, I know we can say that these aren't Rodgers' players, etc., etc., but when he came in the first time, he did make the players that he had at his you know, disposition better. You know, he made those players a lot better when he came in the first time. And he's done that throughout his career. He done it at Liverpool. He done it at Leicester initially. You know, so I think there is, and it's the same excuse, not same excuses, but it's the same things he's saying as last time. You know, he's saying about that he's not getting backed by the board and that he needs money to recruit more quality players. They did recruit during the summer. They did pay a bit of money for a few players. So it's not that... I think what a lot of their fans are wanting is for the board to go big on the spending to continue the dominance over Rangers, because, and this is going to wind all the Celtic listeners right up, in my opinion, Celtic fans don't exist for success in Europe. They only exist to be ahead of Rangers. And I think at times that's where there is a disparity between the two supports. You know, when I see my team getting success, I want it to continue on into Europe. Let's come on. I mean, do you think? Do we think for a second here that the amount of poison and vitriol that was directed towards the board at the weekend and in that stadium at the weekend? I watched the highlights of it. Do we think for a second that if it was if there was no domestic defeats and it was only the European results, would there have been that level of vitriol? Not a chance. Not a chance. And I think that, I mean, a lot of Celtic fans see the fact that they have this huge quote-unquote war chest of money sitting there of whatever it is, 60 or 70 million that they could go out and spend. But the board are probably making a calculated risk assessment here and saying, actually, do you know what? We don't need to spend that much money to remain ahead of Rangers and keep the fans happy. If I was a Celtic fan, I would be demanding a lot more of my board in terms of Europe. I think, who was it? Was Dave or Scott was saying, you know, their fans, the European, the fact that they have made no progress in Europe is a lot more worrying than the fact that they're potentially, what will it be? It'll be a point if Rangers win their games in hand, won't it? A point or 2 points?
2 points.
2 points. So, you know, that is a lot more worrying.
Yeah. I mean, I can only kind of go from when we have the WhatsApp chat and Scott and Chris get involved. I think there is frustration from the fans, and there has been for years, about what happens in Europe, because it feels like every summer they will not spend money until they know what tournament they're playing in. But it's probably got to the point there's a bit of apathy about it, because it's just like, well, that's what the board are like. That's just how it's going to be.
There was a lot, and look, there was a lot more frustration in the stands of Ibrox last season when we were getting pumped 7-0 after Liverpool. I feel that a lot of Celtic fans, they want to really assess where they see their club going here. You know, if they got to the last 16 of the Champions League, but Rangers won a treble, would they be happy with that? I'm not going to say I would be happy with it, but you know, I think that the board tend to prioritise the domestic situation more, and I think that the fans are maybe not happy with it, right? Maybe happy is the wrong word, right? But their priorities are a wee bit, well, they're nowhere mine would be.
Yeah. We'll need to get a Celtic fan on to talk about it, and we'll find out.
Well, don't worry. I'm sure we'll be getting a lot of replies to the pod anyway when it goes out on Twitter.
Yeah, we shall see. But yeah, I think that's it. Good wee show. Nice mix of chat. Always good to have Dave and Josh on. Scott, thanks for coming on for the first time.
Pleasure, mate. Anytime.
And Scott, good to have you back on, because your appearance before was legendary in terms of the six-a-side team, wasn't it? We got.
Oh, I'm surprised I got an invite back on after that, aye.
I think we tried inviting you back, but negotiations have been tough for you. Like, you've been a big shot now with Laurie on the old Parts podcast. Before we wrap up, pardon the pun, for Christmas, if you were to get one football present in your stocking on Christmas Day, what would it be? I'll go with you, Dave, first.
Good question, John. You put me on the spot there. A ticket for Germany next year.
Right, okay.
Because I've not got one yet.
Right, okay. So if anyone's got a spare ticket for Dave, get in touch, Santa. Josh, what would you choose to get in your stocking?
I don't know about my stocking, mate, but I can tell you a great gift for any Celtic fan stocking. It's this lovely signed first jersey by the first team that I'm currently selling. I won it in a raffle, and it's signed by the whole first team. So that would be a lovely stocking filler at a bargain price of £300 for any Celtic fan willing to buy, and you can get me on Twitter about that. In terms of my own gift, I don't know. I got a really good autobiography of Andrei Shevchenko the other day. So, I don't know, some sort of a book autobiography about a legendary player, Kaká, or somebody. I'm thinking AC Milan players now. Somebody like, you know, something like that.
Okay. SM Media, Scott?
Probably would be an autobiography or something like that, Oh, that's quite a tough question, actually. Probably, stupid as it sounds, just give me to give me the whole of Christmas and you can watch every game that's on. That's my Christmas. That's my Christmas present. No dramas in my life. Just focus on football. That would be my Christmas. I know that's quite boring, but I'm not a big gift person. I usually get a mystery football shop for Christmas and love it.
Aye, mystery football shop's good, aye. Right, Scott, I've left you to last because you're usually got a bit of good comedy in you.
Well, I suppose there's no chance I'm ever going to pay the best part of £200 to spend a night in Gorgie, so someone would need to buy me a night at the Tynecastle Hotel as a present. There's nothing quite like looking at a plastic sort of plasma TV with a picture of Tynecastle on it for £160 to get the blood pumping. So, somebody would need to buy me that as a present. There's not a chance I'm putting any more money into their coffers that's not football related.
Ideal. So, all of you have a good Christmas. There will be at least one other show before the end of the year, possibly two. There's a whole debate about the Christmas quiz 2 years ago, which was quite entertaining. So that might return. What do you think, Josh? Possibility?
Mate, yes. As long as it doesn't happen like the last one.
Right, okay. Bye. Thanks, everyone, and happy football.